This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana and Xiaoning. In half an hour, as we always do on a weekday, we have the breakfast grill. Xiaoning, who's in the hot seat today?
Well, it's Dato' Wan Kamaruzaman Wan Afman. And if you think, why does that name sound familiar? It's because he was the CEO of Kuap not that long ago. But now, he is the chairman of Iris Capital Partners, which is a firm involved in venture debt. So we hear a lot about venture capital, and it's mainly about equity, but very seldom debt. So I'm going to be asking him, what's the benefit of using debt as opposed to equity? How is it helpful if you're a startup? How should you make an application? And is this at all is this all due to the Dana Penjana scheme that the government has created, which is matching funding one for one? So due to tune in, and then we're going to have a little bit of a discussion in terms of the economy and whether GLLCs should be reformed.
A very pertinent discussion. You'll want to stay tuned after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. We're turning our attention now, though, to what's happening over in Western Europe. European countries are facing some of the most sweltering temperatures on record as severe heat waves affect the UK, France, Portugal, Spain and Greece. Some experts are calling this a heat apocalypse, with the mercury hitting above 40 degrees Celsius in several cities.
Just imagine, in Portugal, temperatures hit 47 degrees Celsius last Thursday, a record for July. And this isn't unique to Europe. India and North Australia went through extreme heat waves in March, while Japan had the worst heat wave in 150 years last month. In fact, in China, the summer has brought three heat waves that have buckled roads, melted tar and popped off roof tiles. Now, the present situation is yet another example of the extreme and erratic weather patterns that emerge as a result of global warming.
Now, the science tells us that heat waves have become more frequent, more intense and last longer because of human-induced climate change. What impact will this have on the global economy? And will the rising temperatures be the wake-up call that governments need to take action on climate change risks before they become an irreversible reality. Joining us on the line to shed some light on these extreme weather phenomena is Dr. Renard Hsu, Sustainability and Climate Change Specialist. Renard, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Now, parts of Europe are currently experiencing extreme heat waves, and this was mirrored in other parts of the world earlier this year, including in India and Japan. To what extent does climate change factor into the phenomena of heat waves that we're seeing at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, climate change is making heat waves more frequent and intense because of record concentrations of heat-trapping greenhouse gases. The science is very clear. We know that some solar radiation is typically reflected back by Earth, but some is absorbed by greenhouse gases and, re-emitted in all directions, hence heating up our Earth almost like an oven. The science is very clear, and the IPCC report, has already warned us about this, that, heat waves and other extreme weather events, they are silent killers. Mm.
But Renard, my big question is, what impact do extreme heat waves have on economic activity? Especially for countries that aren't used to such weather patterns, would countries which are perhaps more used to it be more resilient when temperatures rise?
Well, I mean, we know that extreme heat waves directly impact workability, which is really defined as one's ability to work. It affects productivity and also, to a certain extent, survivability for marginalized communities. The logic is very simple. If it's too hot to work, right, people just can't concentrate on their tasks at hand. They won't be productive. And there have been numerous empirical studies, in fact, that have documented such impacts, right, in the Lancet journal. More people are likely to be exposed to heat stress in urban than in rural areas due to the heat island urban effect, where temperatures are higher, right, due to existing buildings and infrastructure.
Does this also then impact agriculture? Give us some color on this. How important is heat waves?
Yeah, definitely. Well, the science says that, for every 1 degree Celsius of increase in temperature, we are looking at a decline in crop use by about 2 to 3%. And this is four major crop use, right? Rice, grain, wheat, corn, which makes up about 2/3 of human calorific intake. Even though the percentages look small, but on a global basis, right, this could actually affect, right, things like survivability. There are still parts of people that are famished and experiencing famine. So it's a very serious issue that needs to be looked into.
Mm. And I guess I think climate change impact is being seen all across the world. Are there particular areas and communities that you'd say are particularly vulnerable to climate change-induced disasters, whether it's heat waves or other forms of extreme weather?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that I've pointed out earlier is vulnerable communities and countries like are already suffering from very severe losses and damage, right, of not just lives, affected livelihoods, crops, as we've mentioned, and also infrastructure, right, caused by unavoidable impacts of climate change. Communities that are least responsible for global emissions, unfortunately, are facing the worst impacts, and they do not always have the resources to cope. And to add on to this, or to further exacerbate the situation, right, there's currently a lack of global financing facility, right, to support recovery from what we call, you know, loss and damages that these people endure.
Then how do you foresee climate change impact to manifest itself in this region in Southeast Asia? Are we going to see heat waves, more rainfall, or perhaps both?
Yeah, so I would say that, you know, the science is very clear. And this is what, you know, climate scientists have been warning us, you know, for ages. If we are unable to cap temperatures from rising by 1.5 degrees Celsius, then we will be experiencing more erratic and extreme weather events. You know, as I've mentioned, more intense, not just droughts, but floods, right, especially in this region. And I think efforts, right, need to be ramped up in this space. Including, you know, one of the things that I've been calling for is actually an enactment of an ASEAN Green New Deal to promote cooperation in this space to share best practices on how to address both climate mitigation and adaptation measures. So there's still a lot more that needs to be done, and we need to do it urgently.
Now, I mean, okay, so the ASEAN Green Deal sounds like a great idea, but let's say if we just bring the conversation just back to Malaysia, what do you think our government can actually do? Because we've seen floods, we've seen extreme weather temperatures, and we know climate change is real. So should it be considering things like carbon tax credits? You know, what else can we do?
I would say that, you know, we need a whole of government and whole of society approach. From a governmental perspective, you know, it's obviously pushing for much stronger policies on this end. And one of the things that has been in discussion is actually the enactment of a Climate Change Act, which supposedly would be a holistic, you know, approach to cover both mitigation and adaptation measures. But also from a society perspective, I think instead of sometimes waiting, right, on some of these decision makers, there's still a lot of things that we can do, including changing our lifestyles and habits, like how we act, right, and adopting low carbon lifestyles. I think that would be quite key. In fact, there have been studies that show that, you know, if all of us were to put, you know, to come together to address this issue, we would be able to cut down emissions at least by 50% just based on lifestyle changes.
Right. So it's everyone can play a part in this. Earlier, Renard, you were mentioning about the, the lack of international effort when it comes to climate financing. I'm wondering if you expect any significant developments during COP27 later this year. Do you think the multilateral efforts will ramp up?
Yeah, I think if anything, multilateral efforts has brought to, like, I hope, a sense of urgency, you know, for us to tackle, right, this issue, the defining issue of our generation, as I would call it. This effort is enormous, and it's not something that can be done by a single person. Some people are hopeful that COP27 actually being held in African soil, a continent experiencing some of the worst impacts of this crisis, right, will mean a stronger push to address, you know, the loss and damage that I've mentioned earlier. And I think some of the things to look out for at COP27, I think, would be the delivery of the promised US $100 billion per year to help developing countries mitigate and adapt to the impacts of climate change. We want to see mobilization of finance, right, to acknowledge a loss and damage fund. And hopefully we'll be seeing new commitments and implementations, right, to limit global heating to well below 2 degrees Celsius, right, by the end of this century.
Now, very related to climate change is the shift towards renewables. But, you know, the war in Ukraine has put a light on the fact that most countries want energy security. Do you think those shift to, let's say, wind, solar will be derailed because of this? Countries will now think twice about spending money on renewables?
Well, I sort of see this as really an opportunity of actually turning a crisis situation into an opportunity. So instead of, you know, continuing to focus, right, on the development of fossil fuels, perhaps there's an opportunity here to really, you know, consider how we can actually expand on renewable energy such as wind and solar. I think the opportunities are immense in this space. And already as we speak, right, I think a lot of countries are already committing to actually shutting down, you know, coal-fired power plants, which is, you know, a step in the right direction, I would think.
All right, Renard, thanks very much for speaking with us. That was Dr. Renard Siu, Sustainability and Climate Change Specialist, talking to us about the impact of heat waves over in Europe and really how governments can better respond to climate change risks, focusing on mitigation and adaptation, putting forward some recommendations, even for our own government, on how they can move forward on this. It's 7:47 in the morning. We're heading into some messages. When we come back, we're going to take a look at the fintech landscape in Malaysia. What are the trends to watch? Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.